Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Linda Pelaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to A Few Things with Claire and Erica, where we introduce you to all of the new discoveries that we're dying to share with anyone who will listen.
Like you.
Like you. I guess that includes you. You're listening. This podcast, this radio show, is based on our newsletter called 10 Things, which you can sign up for at ofakind.com, where you will also discover the work of emerging designers in the home and fashion space and read their stories, find out what inspires them. So check out ofakind.com for the full package.
Yeah, I'm Erica.
And I'm Claire.
And we are going to talk about being in your 20s and 30s in a little bit with Marissa Meltzer. But before that, breakfast.
I feel like our not to get out of hand, but I feel like our breakfast game is on lock. Like
you, I think so. We're both pretty serious about breakfast.
It is not a meal to be skipped in this company.
You know, I didn't used to eat breakfast. I don't think until I was officially an adult.
Oh, I did not know that about
in
you.
In high school, I didn't. My mom would make me breakfast and send me to school with it, and I'd give it to this kid, Peter Nelson, who didn't have breakfast at home. My mom would get so pissed.
Poor Peter Nelson. That was like me, though. My mom never made me breakfast growing up, and I would pick up my friend Bree because she couldn't drive yet, and her mom would always have an egg sandwich for her, and she'd bring it, and eventually her mom picked up on the fact that I didn't have breakfast, and so she would send Brie with two egg sandwiches.
Wow. So we both had a breakfast pass off story.
Exactly. I really identify with Peter Nelson.
Peter Nelson. Yeah. Yep. Really. Yeah. But as adults, yes. I think we've really have a serious breakfast routine. You have a very consistent one that you've been evolving over the last couple of years.
So I do a smoothie, and if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that I have, I had a juncture in my life where I started to become healthier, like reasonably healthy, and I started running, and
it's the chicken wing to smoothie transition.
Exactly. And right around this time I started running, I guess I just decided to be really extreme about it, and I started making smoothies. So every morning I dump a bunch of ingredients into a blender, and I could talk for a really long time about my blender. It's the Vitamix. If you've been wondering about the Vitamix, the answer is yes, it is worth the money.
You went through like how many blenders before
so
this?
Many blenders. Like I would go through a blender a year because I would break them because I put some serious stuff in my blenders.
Yep.
I put almonds, like roasted full almonds. I put kale, yogurt, and then any variety of cut fruit. So like mangoes, pineapples. I always put a banana in just because it sort of helps with consistency. And then some water and some ice cubes. And it sounds complicated, but it's really not. Like you just keep these sorts of things in your regular grocery run all the time. You dump them all in. Doesn't really matter what proportion you put them in. You figure it out yourself. And then you have a really awesome like fiber, protein, dairy, everything filled drink, and it's so fast. You put a straw in it and you're just like done.
Yeah.
And people are always like, but what about cleaning the blender? Well, I have a trick for you. You rinse it out, you put water and soap in the blender, and then you turn the blender on. And it cleans the blender for you. Because
yeah,
it's
that
like,
makes sense.
Yeah, right?
Yeah,
it's
of
like,
course. But
so
yeah.
Do it and be done with it. And then like, you know, once a week, put it in the dishwasher if you have one. But it's actually a very quick and simple, you know, thing. And
that's
it just
pretty
feels
genius.
Awesome to start the morning having eaten that many fruits and vegetables. And
yeah.
You're like, you're done for the day.
Yeah.
You know?
I am a big egg person. So most of the time, my breakfast routine revolves around eggs. So a regular staple are fried eggs with flour tortillas, and then avocado if we have them, salsa.
Can
the
you
Valentino
talk about how
salsa.
You fry your eggs? Because I struggle.
Yep, I can.
Thank you.
So I do about 2 tablespoons of oil, a little more than I think I should
what
use.
What kind of oil?
Olive oil.
Okay.
Heat it up and then crack the eggs in the pan. And I used to flip them. I don't anymore. Okay. And I just let the bottom. I let the edges get really brown and crispy.
So
I wait for the yolk to base for it to get little sort of like white spots
yeah.
on the yolk where that sort of white is starting to cook.
Okay.
I don't deal well with the
I hate the clear
uncooked
yeah, it's
white.
So gross.
That grosses me out so much.
Which I think is hard. So how do you this? I think this is where I struggle. How do you know when the oil is ready? Like how hot do you get it? Is it like rippling?
It's rippling. It's almost smoking, which I know you're supposed to pretty much avoid with olive oil, but it's almost like a smoking point.
So would you say that this is like the crispy egg?
This is a crisp. This is
okay.
like like the crispy egg, which is like a Smitten Kitchen thing.
Frank Prinzano, Instagram chef, is really into the idea of the crispy
egg. Exactly. And then in that case, you're using a little bit more olive oil and you're basically spooning the olive oil over the eggs the whole time. So, I'm a little lazier about it than that. I don't quite put that much effort into it. And I'm cutting the avocado and warming up the tortillas in a pan in the meantime. And it seems like it takes a lot of effort. It doesn't. The other egg thing that I make really regularly is from Gwyneth Paltrow's cookbook, It's All Good, which I swear by. Say what you may about Gwyneth, but this cookbook is awesome. That basically involves leftover grains of any type, eggs, greens of any type, and some garlic. So you saute the garlic in olive oil.
Are you like chopping garlic at 8 a.m?
I just use the garlic press.
Okay.
It takes a minute.
Okay.
Right? So olive oil, garlic, throw in the greens until they wilt, throw in the grains. Immediately you put, you crack the eggs in and then you just cover it. And in 7 minutes or whatever, it's done.
Okay.
Great with hot sauce, great with Greek yogurt, in a kind of like Yotam Ottolenghi way. And when I'm not doing eggs...
I feel like we have just made ourselves sound really ambitious. And people are like, you bitches are crazy. Yeah. What are you doing? Yes. We should talk about some
simpler things. The far less ambitious breakfast. One of the biggest hits from our 10 Things newsletter...
Yes, ever.
...was the overnight oatmeal. Which
it's so great.
It's so great. It's so easy. You put oatmeal, maybe some chia seeds if you feel like it, maybe some nuts, maybe some dried fruit.
I'm just going to go on record. Craisins. Chia seeds don't agree with me.
Yeah. They're very optional.
Okay. Yeah.
You top them with almond milk, regular milk. It's very sort of whatever. The full recipe is on Kitchen Confidant. A little bit of maple syrup or agave in a jam jar or a mason jar. You toss it in the fridge overnight. And when you wake up, breakfast is ready. That's it.
So it's super similar to Bertram Muesli. I mean, I don't know that it's actually any different than Bertram Muesli.
No, it's just like different ingredients. It's like slightly different ingredients. There's no like apple, which is like a beer. Bertram Muesli has the grated apple.
So I went to Tokyo for my honeymoon last year and we stayed at Park Hyatt, which is the classic fancy hotel. And they have the most amazing Bertram Muesli, which was what finally got me being like, okay, maybe this overnight oatmeal thing has, you know, could be for me.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine, shout out Carly Weisel, went to Tokyo last month and knowing that how much I love Park Hyatt, Bertram Muesli basically pitched a story that she would write about their Bertram Muesli if they would give her the recipe for it. And so she came home from Tokyo with the recipe for this Bertram Muesli, which is basically...
It's a home run.
It was pretty baller. It's basically a different, another take on this overnight oatmeal thing. So we'll try to post that too if we can.
Another thing I do, you know, in addition to a sort of classic avocado toast, which is both delicious and a joke at this point, is toast with ricotta, cherry tomatoes, topped with a little olive oil and salt, which is something that the Smile serves on like a breakfast and lunch menu. And it's the easiest thing in the world, obviously, and is delicious for breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
Riffing on the overnight oatmeal, which is like ready when you wake up because you've done it the night before, I feel like there's a couple of things that...
You can prep for the week.
You can prep for the week. You do it on Sunday night and you have it the rest of the week. And I feel like for people who... If you're not already eating breakfast, you've got
to
start
there. This is the
way
to go.
Yeah, you've got to start with something that's already ready. So I know like breakfast cookies are a thing that I was big on Tumblr for a while.
Totally. There's a recipe that's really good and super healthy that is just oatmeal and banana, basically. And it does not... Cookie is a bit of a stretch, but
it's shaped like a cookie.
It is a baked easy thing that you can take with you that is healthy.
Well, and some of them you don't even bake, right? You just put them in the fridge and they sort of like harden in the
fridge.
So just Google breakfast cookie or try this banana oatmeal situation.
From Ambitious Kitchen, which we'll post the link to.
Egg muffins are another great like grab and go situation. You're basically just making like a quiche slash
or like
frittata. It's really more of a frittata in a muffin tin, and you can make that. And that sort of stuff lasts a really long time. Put it in a muffin tin, have it for the rest of the week. And then... Is it time to talk about the ultimate breakfast
pack? Well, one more, because then we'll see So, hard-boiled eggs, which are delicious but kind of boring. There's a great recipe on Food 52 where you basically, after you hard-boil or medium-boil the eggs, soak them in this soy sauce sugar mixture.
It's like savory hard-boiled egg.
A savory hard-boiled egg, which just makes them feel like a little bit more legit, and it means you don't have to really do anything other than grab them.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, so now you're
so recently this
last
is
resort slash last lifeline.
Yeah, so I am somebody who gets really hangry, meaning like I get really angry when I'm hungry and I can't function. And I know that I have some brothers and sisters out there who feel me on this. So I have to have something in my purse at all times. And I just am really over granola bars. And so I recently discovered peanut butter pockets, which are basically, so the ones that I buy are by Justin's Peanut Butter. And that this is kind of like a bougie peanut butter brand that makes really delicious peanut butter and almond butter. And they look like those packets that like runners
goo,
carry.
The,
yeah, like yeah. goo, G-U. Yeah. So it looks like that like weird, gross electrolyte like thing
sludge.
That runners are, yes, sludge that runners are supposed to eat, but it's actually just peanut butter. And you can fit it, like you could put it in your wallet if you wanted to. It's like a flat pack of peanut butter. And there have been mornings that I have not had time to grab breakfast, and having this like peanut butter packet with all the protein and the fat in it has been the most amazing savior.
So Claire just sucks the peanut butter straight out of this packet. It's really something to watch.
And sometimes if I'm feeling civilized, I will put it on a spoon. But I do think if you really can't get it together to eat breakfast, like keep a jar of peanut butter at your desk, or
it's a good protein.
Yeah,
fat
keep
fix.
Yep. Exactly. Keep a packet of peanut butter in your purse, something like that.
Okay, so when you spill the peanut butter on yourself or the soy sauce from the hard boiled eggs,
tied to go pen. I have a mini tied to go pen. I bought it at Harmon Face Values last week, and I've already used it like 7 times.
I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
Which is our transition to our next topic: taking care of your clothes. So at Of a Kind, we encourage people to, you know, invest more in things that last and really only buy things that they love. But if you stain those things that you love or tear those things that you love, what do you do?
I feel like we have just been getting really into all these little tools and tricks lately.
Absolutely.
And trying to cut down on our dry cleaning bill. So for example, a couple weeks ago, I was wearing a shirt and I got blood on it. God knows how. And I used the trick that my mother always told me, which is you spit on like small blood stains, basically. And basically how she explained it is the enzymes in your saliva break down the blood. And it's like, if it's your own saliva and it's your own blood, that's pretty ideal. And so that was my first line of defense. That was the triage situation, spit on the shirt. And then I took it to the dry cleaner the next day to be like, can you take care of this? There's a blood stain on it. And the woman at the dry cleaner and I both stood there for like 5 minutes trying to find the blood stain, and it was gone. And I was like, wow, spit is magic.
Well, we were talking about this after. Shockingly, we've already talked about this particular incident. And Mary Roach, this amazing science writer, outlines in her book Gulp about the magical powers of spit and how it is this wonderful cleaning agent that we are not taking advantage of.
So guys, take advantage.
So spit on your clothes.
I can't vouch for it for anything other than blood, but it's really real when it comes to blood.
Yes. In terms of other cleaning agents, you're big into OxiClean right now.
I love OxiClean. And I mean, I'm sure you're shocked. I go through a tub in like a week because I do not ration it out. I was in Mexico swimming in a pool that had chlorine that was just dyeing like all of my bathing suits yellow. And the first line of defense was vinegar and water, because I had read that. I think Jolie Kerr, who also has a show on Heritage Radio, had said that that was a good thing. So that kind of got the yellowness out. But then what really got it fresh and white was the OxiClean, which is also amazing for like getting coffee out of furniture, like coffee, like if you spill coffee on your upholstered furniture, pour some OxiClean on there, girl.
Yeah.
Be done with it.
I need to get on the OxiClean train. Another thing that is, when we're trying to cut down on dry cleaning bills, sweater care. I know that's not really in season, but it's something that maybe you should think about.
People will be listening to this podcast for months to come.
Exactly. So sweater care. I'm big into washing my wool and cashmere sweaters in the washing machine.
That is so ballsy.
I don't dry them in there, but I wash them.
I would never.
I use the Laundress sweater detergents. We actually did a post on the site that we will also include in the rehash of this on the site. But one of our designers suggested, instead of squeezing out a sweater or otherwise trying to sort of like demoisturize it, I guess.
After you've washed it. After you've had the guts to put it in your washing machine.
The dry clean only thing is really just to prevent you from saying that you screwed it up
right.
when you washed it.
Okay.
Is to drop it in a salad spinner.
Whoa.
Because it's like, it's very gentle. It just sort of wicks the moisture away slowly.
So have you done this?
No, I think you need to have a kind of dedicated salad spinner for this.
Great
I'm not
point.
That interested in having one salad spinner that's multitasking between laundry and greens.
Okay.
So beyond the cleaning stuff, other care.
Sticking with the sweater thing, you are really into the sweater shaver.
Yep. Yeah.
Because I hate when your wool sweater gets pilled.
Yeah.
It's like certain wool sweaters you can like almost like it's like the intentional look, but there's certain nice sweaters that you don't want getting all pilled.
Right. Where you'll get it right around the seams or under the arms. And it just it looks really so unattractive. Disheveled.
So you have the razor.
So thing. I have the electric ones, which people have mixed feelings about. But then there are also the sweater saver, which is almost like a pumice stone for your sweaters. The complaint there that I have read is that it removes the pills, but then the pills don't have a place to go. So they're just on your ground, on your bedspread, on the sweater.
Okay.
So the cleanup process is a little bit more intense. Whereas the little electronic thing, it picks up the pills and you empty it.
I feel like I want like a video side by side of don't each you? Of them to yeah. be able to really gauge here.
They're both, I think, a great solution and will just make you feel better about your wardrobe. Relatedly, the My Little Steamer.
Oh my God.
This is a life-changing
thing. My Little Steamer
thing.
Is life-changing. So if you live in New York, you likely don't have a dedicated washroom with like an ironing board that's set out and an iron. And every time you take your iron and ironing board out of your crappy little closet, it makes a mess and it's a disaster.
And it just means you never want to iron your clothes or deal
exactly.
with anything.
So you just walk out looking all wrinkled. And obviously traditional steamers are like big hulking things on wheels that you
and
don't
they always
really...
leak water everywhere and just make a ginormous mess.
So we discovered this little handheld mini steamer that can fit like in your suitcase or in your drawer, and you pour a little bit of water in it, plug it in, fire it up, and it is so fast and so effective and it getting wrinkles out, and it's just life changing and awesome. And I never
you don't
rarely
need to
ever
use distilled water. No. You don't have to do anything special. It's the easiest.
And I rarely use irons anymore because of it, because unless something's like it's like a I don't know, you know, the occasions where you really need an iron. But this thing is amazing, and if you don't have it, and please go buy it. Please make your life
better. The way Claire and I feel about this is that when we're traveling together, the night before we fly, we'll text, are you bringing the steamer? Who's or should I bring the steamer? Like what? Because we don't need two, but we need one.
We need, you need for one. Sure. Who's bringing the mini steamer? It's so, it is so, so major. It's like always sitting out on my counter because I use it daily.
So we'll give you a minute to go Google that. In the meantime, we will go to commercial and come back with Marissa.
Program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Welcome back to A Few Things with Claire and Erica. Sign up for our newsletter at ofakind.com and listen to this podcast.
Every week, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern time.
Jack, our producer, is like, you guys are so terrible at introducing your show. Like, anytime we go, we're like awesome at the middle part, but going in and out, we're like
outros that we suck at outros.
Yeah, it's not our it's not our highlight. So now here we are in the middle. Thank God we got through that. Okay, and we're back with Marissa Meltzer, a very good friend of ours, an amazing writer, an expert on all things beauty and culture.
Yes.
Did I cover it?
She writes for the New York Times and Elle and has definitely written a bunch of things that you've read. She's also part of our Scandal Viewing Club, which is transitioning.
That actually should be at the top of her resume.
For sure.
We're all Team Jake.
Yeah. Team Jake.
Right. This is what unites us.
Which is transitioning to a Judy Blum book club for the summer.
I gotta get on.
Because we gotta do something.
Yeah. Marissa has also knows like a lot about youth culture in general, I would say. Would you say that?
I don't know if I would think of myself that way now that I'm getting kind of old.
I think
but
you're
I
pretty
think
in
you're
touch.
Like an expert. I would consider you an
I
expert.
I was mistaken for a 65-year-old like
what?
2 months ago.
That person was blind.
Maybe. I don't know.
You but know you what wrote, the kids care about.
You wrote a book about sassy, which is like the ultimate. It's like a very important moment in youth culture, I would say.
Absolutely.
And so we are here today to talk about something that we've all been talking about a lot lately, which is just being in your 30s versus being in your 20s, because we're all in our 30s now. And it's like, how did we get here?
Yeah.
And the thing is, surprise, it's kind of amazing.
It is kind of amazing.
It's kind of great, right? And we've been talking a lot about just like all the sort of changes, not so much like the like, oh, now I have wrinkles and can't lose weight as easily, but things like, I don't ever want to wear a high heel again ever in my life, and I'm fine with that. Like, maybe to somebody's wedding. But, like, maybe. Things like, the older I get, I'm like, actually wearing high heels is like giving myself putting myself in a compromising position. I can't walk as fast. I have stuff to do. I have things to
it
places to be.
It looks a little dated or something too.
Yeah. Like, it looks too hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was at an unnamed event last night, and some girls there were wearing these like 4 or 5 inch heels, yeah. And A, they looked so uncomfortable walking around, and B, I thought, like, well, you're not on Sex in the City. Like, this feels very right. dated.
It feels
me.
Very 90s.
Like, everyone else was wearing like slides and sandals and whatever,
yeah,
sneakers. It was kind of rainy out. Mm-hmm. Like, are you walking? Like, where do you live?
Are you walking in and out of an Uber only exclusively? Well, we had
Yeah, if you're going to a wedding, if you're an editor in chief, if you're making a presentation somewhere, like,
if you're being driven in a car everywhere, exactly.
We went to we were walking around, you know, the meatpacking district for a meeting a couple years ago, and it was during Fashion Week, and it was one of these blizzard days. It was a day in February where there were literally 4 inches of snow on the ground, and we ran into someone who was wearing 4-inch heels, open toe.
No.
Yeah.
And it was just like heartbreaking in this way.
To me, it just looks like tourist or something.
Or it's just like, it's just like you feel like you have something to prove.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it just seems like 20-year-old street style, like aspirant.
Yes.
Like,
it feels willing, aspirational. That's exactly.
But in this way that's sort of like, oh, honey, like, you don't need to be, like, you look ridiculous. It's impractical. I always think of the time this past winter. It was the middle of winter, and I saw Grace Coddington walking to work wearing UGGs with a Celine bag.
Because she's at the point in her life.
From the subway to work,
and it's like, because she doesn't have anything to prove.
Yeah, and I was wearing Shirlene boots, too. Like, everyone was. Like, maybe she takes them off when she gets to the office.
But she probably steps into a flat if she does.
She's probably putting on, like, some Celine loafers or something like
absolutely.
That. Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like, we were talking about manicures a couple of weeks ago and how, like, you know, when we feel like we're, like, a little more insecure, we have something to prove, you know, it's like, have your nails done. But when everything's fine, like, you don't always feel like you need to look that pulled together. And I feel like heels, when I was in my 20s, and especially when we were first starting the business, it was like, I want to be taken seriously. I need to be wearing heels.
Mm-hmm. It felt like capital serious. Capital professional.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, heels go in and out. Like,
yeah,
there could be a
true.
Time where they start looking fresh to me.
Yeah.
But at the moment, it still feels like a little 2003.
Totally.
And I think it's just at a point, too, where women are like, okay, like we're all working really hard. We're all hustling. We all are running around to a million meetings a day. Why are we going to put ourselves at this disadvantage where it's really hard to walk and uncomfortable?
Yeah. I have even for, like, heels I'd wear to, like, an event, no higher than 3 inches.
Yeah, I think that's a good.
It just tortures me, and I won't wear them, and I'll just look at them, and they'll make me feel depressed.
Yeah,
that's fair. So, Marissa, how do you think that your style has changed from when you were in your 20s to when you were in your 30s?
I mean, I love fashion, and I like to think of myself as someone that, like, follows styles, but I also. I don't think of myself as someone who, like, adopts all kinds of trends. Like, I have a very specific.
You have a specific aesthetic. Yeah.
Of, like, what looks good on me, what I like, you know, what I like on other people, etc. But, you know, I think, so clothes-wise, I think I've always been fairly classic, but
it was that's impressive. You should pat yourself on the back for that.
I don't want to sound like I always look good. Like, there was definitely some weird things, but for me, the errors were more about... hair. I would say hair specifically. Like, I feel like I spent the first, like 4 or 5 years I lived in New York growing my hair out. Like,
yeah.
I got my hair cut into a, like a sort of bob, I don't know, maybe like 2001-ish.
Okay.
And then would like grow it out a little and then cut it off again. And then when I first moved to New York, probably like late 2002, early 2003, I went to, again, I will not name, but a stylist recommended by a friend, and he gave me the worst haircut. I mean, it was like cheekbone length, but also a bob.
And Marissa has really curly hair.
I have really curly hair. I have, like, I just don't have, I don't have a face that's great for, like, yeah. short hair or straight hair. Like, there's definitely, like, a length
that suits that it, you
that
best.
Suits me and yeah. suits my hair texture.
Yeah. yeah.
My hair.
Same.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, for sure. Right. But definitely when you have curly hair, you kind of know there's certain lengths where your hair is just, like.
Not going to cooperate with you.
The curl does yeah. not work.
Right, right, right.
I looked so bad. And then I swear to God, I spent, like, 4 or 5 years growing that cut out and just having like various, I look back on it because it was around the time I got a digital camera, so I had like a lot more photos of myself, and I'm like,
right,
I was growing that fucking, sorry, is it
it's
okay
fine.
If I
swear? I think
yeah,
it's
yeah.
fine.
I was growing that cut out for so long.
Well, that is definitely, I think, like a 20s versus 30s. Like, by the time most women in their 30s, they're like not experimenting so much with a hairstyle, right? Like,
or yeah, or I have money now, so I would just get extensions.
Oh, okay.
And just like deal with it yeah. until right. it grew out yeah. or something.
Yeah. Right.
So I didn't look like so. I mean, I just looked really bad. Like, I yeah. would have paid, now I would have been like, I'll pay you whatever. I just need this to grow out, like, 4 inches.
Well, I think you and I have had a similar mm-hmm. experience that we know what haircut looks oh, good yeah. on us. And yeah. it's been the struggle of finding the person who's willing to give it to us. And I know that a slightly angled bob looks good on me. And right. then I'll try someone new and I'll be like, oh, but you, no, but that's not what you want because you're going to look like a newscaster. I'm like, stop.
Do I dress like a newscaster?
Right, like leave yeah. it. Like, I'm not yeah. going to blow it out and do, you know, a round brush angled bob because that's not my look.
Yeah.
But do what I ask.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. So how would you, Erica, say that your style has changed in your 30s? I mean, you came very young to some very specific rules about your wardrobe, right? Like when you were in college, you were like black, white, and pink only.
Well, yeah, but I wore a lot of pink. I did wear so, a lot of pink.
30s.
You were like Claudia Kishi, but sub pink and
I did like
red.
A load of pink laundry. That was like the third category
How did
of laundry.
You get black, white, and pink seems
I don't
very
know.
80s. Too.
I don't know.
Well, but I love this. This is like some insight into Erica's personality. Why no brown? Not because it didn't look good on her, but because it just like simplified things, because then you didn't have to have black and brown shoes, because as you all know, in the early 2000s, like if you were wearing black, you wore black shoes. If you were wearing right. brown, you wore brown shoes. Like
I don't
that was
wear brown.
It.
Yeah. I just yeah. don't like it.
Yeah.
I wear camel. I have a very specific Same. Color palette yeah. of Same. Colors I yeah. will and will yeah. not wear.
I think it took me longer to land on what shapes and what silhouettes looked good on me and realizing that, you know, my body type looked best without, I didn't need a drop waist skirt. It yeah. wasn't going to do me any favors. Mm-hmm. Or that certain like cuts just were not going to work on me. Yeah. I can't do like a little halter. I don't mm-hmm. have the right shape for yeah. that. And I
Ooh,
think
the pussy bow. Did you guys ever do the tie in the neck?
I
think that had a whole moment. Like I feel like Prada did it in 2000 and then everyone knocked it off.
Absolutely.
Well, I think it's also hard too if you actually have breasts, which we all do
Absolutely.
Because you're really like bringing attention to.
Yeah.
To
well, and
that.
You,
yes.
yeah. And that's one of those things where you feel tempted to try all of these different, you know, looks right. and trends, and then you realize that they look really terrible on you and you maybe don't recognize until you see photos. We were talking
yes.
the other day about how
I had it on an employee ID card because I wore it to my first day of work somewhere. It was there forever of like me and the most just ugly, unflattering, cheap, like
working girl look.
Yeah, it was like, it was all these things that I've never liked on me, and I'm like, why did I?
Because you thought it looked like grown up and professional,
like
and that's why you weren't
maybe like a mock turtleneck, sleeveless.
Right.
Like, I never
right.
wear turtlenecks. I hate things that don't have sleeves, and yet there I was.
Right. We were talking about how. The older I get, the more the word trend grates on me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there was a headline, I can't even remember what site it was on yesterday, that was like, the only four shoe trends you need to know this summer. And I was like, girl, I don't need to know any shoe trends.
Four is a lot.
I need to know zero.
I'm still on slides from last year.
Right?
Exactly. And I think we all are at this point where we just know what we like and know what we respond to. And I'm certainly influenced by the things I see around me, but it's not because this is what everyone's showing everywhere.
I've gotten super comfortable, maybe way too comfortable, with wearing the same thing over and over and over again in the same week. I just, like, I get comfortable in something. I wore the same dress on yesterday as I wore the day before.
And Claire was like, do you think the interns noticed?
Because they were the only people who saw me both days.
It's very French. Yeah.
I just felt like it was really hot both days, and this was the one dress I could wear without a bra and without a waistline. And I was like, this is what I'm doing. It's way too humid for anything else. And I feel like that is the thing. When I turned 30, I was like, if somebody doesn't like the fact that I'm wearing this shirt three times this week, they can deal with it. They can suck it. It looks good. It's comfortable. And most importantly, I feel great in it.
Right.
And that's sort of, I think, the thing that, like, we all have come to, which is, like, if something you're wearing doesn't make you feel awesome, then what's the point? Like, you might as well just wear what makes you feel really good.
Yes.
And sometimes that means, like, not following trends. And sometimes that means wearing the same thing five times in a week.
How have your feelings or approaches to relationships and friendships changed as you've gotten older?
Oh my God, so much. I think that a lot of people in their early 20s latch onto this weird thing where they get into these, like, marriage manques, where you're maybe dating someone in college and then you move in together because
that's the natural next step.
Yeah, and it's going to save money and all these things. And then it's really what I did, where I dated someone all throughout college, and then we moved in together, and we ended up dating for 7 years, which is several years longer than we should have.
Yeah.
And part of it was, like, it was just easy, and part of it was I just didn't really know any better. Like, I didn't have
question it.
Yeah.
Like, you just don't know, have the same warning signs, where now I would have been like, oh, when that happened, I would have known it was time to break up. But it took me much, much longer, and I think you just put up with a lot more bullshit because you don't know any better. I mean, I dated people who, you know, would tell you things that you wouldn't listen to, that they, like, didn't want to be serious, while you're, like, falling in love with them, and you just think, like, if you just...
If you just force,
I would be like, well, maybe if we just go on some, like, really good dates, or, like, just get an awesome away for the weekend.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I would do these things.
Yeah.
up until probably, like, around the time I, turned 30, and I also think, in terms of friends, and this is something that was a lot harder to kick, but I think I had a lot more, like, crazy women friendships or friends who were kind of mean to me or that I didn't necessarily like.
And that were maybe more like frenemies than legitimate friends.
And it took me a really long time to... not jump in with everyone who showed that they liked me. Like, it's not like I didn't have friends growing up. I certainly did, but I was never, like, you know, popular or anything like that. So I think once I was an adult and I, for some reason, you know, would be, like, around girls and people would clearly, like, want to be my friend and kind of pursue me in that way. And also, I wasn't dating because I spent most of my 20s in a serious relationship.
Yeah.
I would just plow right in, where suddenly you're talking on the phone every day, you're hanging out all the time, you're maybe telling this person, you know, secrets, and then you're kind of, and then it just explodes in some way where you, like, hate each other and never talk to each other again. And you're kind of just like, whoa, what just happened?
Right.
Like, what was that 2 years all about or whatever?
Well, I think I've had this realization that you don't have to be really close friends with everyone that you like.
Yeah.
Like, you can just like someone and that can be enough.
You can
see them every once in a while.
To run into them at a party, or so happy when they come to your birthday party, or when you see them at a Christmas party, you just, like, sit in a corner and gossip or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I realized that there are many different tiers of friendship. There's, like, you know, the person who lives near you that you can hang out with really casually all the time, but they're not necessarily, like, someone you're going on vacation with, or, like, talking about your, like, you know, mother's sickness or what, you know what I mean? Like,
Erica always brings up the thing, the thing that's so funny. on Sex and the City, there's characters who will like disappear for an entire season and then come up for one episode and then they disappear again. And mm-hmm. and you always
and that when right. when you're 18, that feels
Scooter.
So
yeah, yes. Scooter. You're like, where did he go? Like, how are there people in your life who you only see once out. Every 6 months?
He was like a tech guy, so you know he's yeah. like busy,
but,
busy funding.
But when you're younger, that yeah. feels so far fetched. Like I watched yeah. Sex and the City
right, like,
when I was
you're
in college.
See all your friends, it's
all
gonna
the
be
time.
Like sitcoms where you see them every.
It's like Friends. It's like Friends.
Right.
Supposed to be
and
like
it's
that.
Not like that.
No, but when yeah, get, no, but yeah. now it is funny because every once in a while we'll see somebody who we haven't seen in so long, and it's like, oh my god, I love that person, and I like know them actually pretty well because I've known them for years. I just only see them once every 6 months. That's the Scooter in our
right,
lives,
right? And also a thing that I think starts to go away as you get older, as you get more busy with other things, is that thing where you're like, let's get drinks,
yeah,
and then you go and get drinks, and suddenly you're like. My whole week has been packed with like
with
drinks,
these catch-up
with these,
meetings, yes.
with these like drinks, with these sort of glorified acquaintances, or like or
is,
like work contacts that you feel warmly about, and you're just like, I've had no time to myself, or I haven't seen, you know. A real friend.
My
or whatever.
Theory is that is kind of a New York LA thing. I don't know. Maybe in our next life we'll have a call-in show and someone from like Minnesota can call in and tell us if this is a regionally specific phenomenon.
No, but I
mean,
think
it definitely seems San Francisco, LA,
yeah.
New York.
Yeah.
You could
Chicagoans tell us. Minneapolitans.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like Parisians don't do that. They'd
no.
be like, what are you talking about?
I'm really glad that you brought up the relationship thing, because I feel like if I had to give one piece of advice to girls in their 20s, and I try to give this advice to like the girls who intern for us and work for us who are younger, do not waste your time in a crappy relationship. It's
I
just so not worth it. And because I was in a relationship for 4 years in my 20s. It was kind of Ms. And I missed a lot of friendships. That at a time when friendship, like women friendships, are really important.
Mm-hmm.
And so many girls that I talked to are like, yeah, but like I spent that time in my 20s like crying at bars because a boy didn't call me. And I'm like, you know, I think I'd rather
that
have
he's
gone
better.
Through that. That's like, yeah, like that's all
part of it. I just did that later.
Exactly.
Because I also had this insane thing where I was, you know, I had never really dated outside of college, and then was like 26, 27 years mm-hmm. old and single for the first time as an adult. And I really thought that I would just sort of let the world know that I was single now, and that all of these guys would be coming out of the woodwork. I really thought that.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, like formally ask me, like I just had no concept of how it worked. It did not work like that.
Well, I think it's funny because maybe you were in the same way, but I think a lot of people get into serious relationships. I did. By the time I got out of it, I was 27 and I was, or 26. And I was like, I'm so old now. I'll never,
right, which is so dumb.
Yeah. I'll never find another guy, which is so crazy. Cause I was 26. And I remember thinking the same exact thing about my career. Oh, I've had two jobs in the same industry. I want to switch. I want to switch industries,
yeah.
but I'm 26.
It's too late.
My resume
yeah.
all has this one industry on it. And that is
yeah.
so bananas.
I was having drinks a little while ago with a big group of people, and one of the women there was probably in her like mid to late 20s, mm-hmm. and she was kind of like complaining / bragging. She's a writer, and she was like, I don't care about the prestige anymore. I'm just taking this job and I'm doing it for the money. And inwardly I was like, that's such a like 20 something thing to say,
yeah.
as if like so dogmatic,
right.
like as if like a
throwing
choice that you made at 27
yeah.
or 28 for mm-hmm. one job is like somehow like the end
indicative,
you know?
Of the rest of your life.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm sure someone who's 50 would say that to me at 37,
yeah. right.
You know,
of course
I feel like my parents were very, my parents never have given me any pressure about being in relationships. And I feel like they even were like, don't ever date someone in high school, which
right.
I think is a wonderful piece of advice.
Yep.
Not that anyone was really trying to date. wasn't that tempting, but you know, like I think it's great. But I also wish that they or someone had been like, and also maybe don't do it in college or in your early 20s.
Right.
Like resist that sort of weird primal urge to
right.
like play house and couple
yeah.
up and pretend to be an adult.
Right.
I think
and
it's
find
so,
yourself
yeah,
first.
I mean, I think
it's
really good to
seductive.
Get practice
yeah.
because I think it's important to know what you want and what you don't want. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's a very empowering thing, but it's seductive, and it is the longer you stay in it, the harder mm-hmm. it is to get out of. And there's just so much to explore.
I mean, anything that you do for a long time, time, it's so hard to extricate yourself from and to imagine a different world.
And so, yeah, jobs, relationships, it's like, if you're not happy, get out before, you know, don't waste any more time in it, right?
And it is never too late.
It's never too late. I will say, like, being single in my late 20s, almost 30s, was one of the most awesome things ever, because I was at the point where I had a lot of confidence because I was, like, no longer young and, like, questioning everything. Mm-hmm. And I also knew what I wanted. So it was a very, like, empowering time to be single, in fact, and it was awesome and so much fun.
I mean, a lot of people complain about being single at my age, and, you know, it's like anything else. It's not like every day I wake up and I'm like, I'm so grateful for being single. But it's also sort of great. Like, you have, you know, more money than before, and you can, like, go on an awesome vacation with your friends or alone. You can, you know, there's just, like, a certain flexibility, and you're not just, like,
you're making all the decisions based on what you want.
You're not, which, like, playing house or, like, awesome stressing out over, you know, things. I don't know. It's not all bad.
Yeah, it's definitely not bad. I mean, I love my husband. I love being married. But we talk a lot about, like, that sense that, you know, every decision you make has an impact on somebody else when you're in that situation.
And
being single,
that's so intense.
It's really intense. Yeah. So it's got to be worth it.
Well,
we could talk about this forever. This is, like, the most girlfriendy chat we've ever had on this. All the guys are, like, done.
They tuned out 10 minutes ago. They're not even listening.
And Jack is like, you've gone 10 minutes overtime talking about girl stuff.
On that note, you've been listening to A Few Things with Claire and Erica. We're here every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Subscribe to our newsletter at ofakind.com.
That's the show.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.